What's up, everyone? This is episode 264 of the Wax Museum Podcast, where I talk about all things basketball cards from past to present to future. This is your host, Kyle, and as always, you guys can find me throughout the week on social media. My Instagram is at Wax Museum Podcast, and my X account is at Wax Museum PC. All right, well, I hope you guys are having a great week so far. I want to give a shout out to all of you that listened to last week's episode with Alex and then sent pictures of Pacers flawless cards that have been pulled in the days that followed. And we talked a little about window shopping on that episode. Well, I attempted to set foot in the store for a Benedict Mathurin card earlier this week and was denied entry, only to see it listed immediately after on another auction platform. So yeah, that's always fun. But anyway, there's a few things I want to add to last week's flawless conversation, some things I've seen over the last week, and then I can put a bow on it and move on, and I'll have that for you here shortly. Additionally, a couple people have asked me about a recent Bloomberg article regarding Michael Rubin, so I'm going to touch on that briefly, and I want to emphasize the briefly part, because I think I've talked about that guy and Fanatics enough for now, but it is basketball card relevant. And there are a few things in there that really give a lot of context for the current manufacturing landscape. I know I always refer to that. So, you know, I do want to talk a little bit about that, but not going to talk too long. And then finally, in today's main segment, I'm going to talk about a recent outing I had at a G League game here in Central Florida. And I'm also going to talk a little about the G League experience in general, because while it's essentially minor league basketball, I think it's valuable for building perspective for the NBA game a lot of us are so drawn to. And then, of course, there are some quirky elements in there as well, so you'll want to make sure to stay tuned for that. Okay, so a lot of you listened to my conversation with Alex last week about Flawless, and while this show can be topical at times, I try not to do stuff that's super time-sensitive, but we were both really excited about the release, and I'm glad we got to talk through things. We recorded on a Sunday, and by the time the episode aired, a lot of the cards we were wondering about had surfaced. And one of those cards was the Paul George Benedict Mathurin dual logo man. And I expressed my hopes that it would feature Paul George in a number 24 jersey and use that old stitched logo man. And to their credit, that's exactly what they did. You know, I know some people think that Panini's designs are a little lazy and all, but it, you know what? It is flawless. It's going to look the same every year. But otherwise, I do feel like Panini was pretty intentional with a lot of the pairings and how all of that played out, at least from what I've seen so far. Now, of course, I've seen some people comment on breaks saying things like, why would they pair Bill Russell with guys like Jonas Valanciunas or Jordan Poole? You know, that seems like a fair question at first, but at the same time, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, everyone wore these tribute patches, and they're just trying to make as many tribute cards as they had patches for. And the fact that they got 300 different game-worn jerseys was pretty impressive to me as well. Speaking of the Russell tribute patches, those are getting a lot of attention. Now, part of it is, I think it's just these breakers have to hype them up to some extent to cover the astronomical cost of the first-off-the-line boxes. But as I explained last week, I also still think they're just really significant cards. And we were wondering if they were going to use different pictures for the players that have multiples, like Tyrese Halliburton has three, LeBron James has three. Well, from you know what I've seen so far, they did. I've seen multiple versions of several different players now. And when Alex and I chatted, I was hopeful I could get one of the non-Halliburton, non-Mathurin Pacers Bill Russell tribute patches for under $500. Well, I haven't seen one of those players listed yet, but these things are getting listed and then selling for way higher than I thought they would. And as of Tuesday afternoon, the cheapest sale of one of these that I've seen is the aforementioned Jordan Poole for nearly $1,400. So I have a feeling that we will see pieces of these patches show up later on. There's probably other jerseys, just like we saw pieces of the Flip Saunders tribute patches kind of make their way into other cards as well. Not a lot of them, but they did trickle out there. So I'm hoping, you know, maybe I'll at least get a piece of one where I can tell it's a part of the number six on there, but only time will tell. Now, aside from the Russell patches, I have noticed a few other real nice relic pieces that have surfaced in this liquidation of sorts. There was a 1/1 Derrick Rose patch that had part of the Knicks 70th anniversary logo. Well, you know, that would have been from his first stint with the team in 2017. So that's one they've probably been waiting to use. And they were happy to see that he got a second stint with the Knicks so they could use one of those in a card. And then I posted a 101 Jamal Murray on my Twitter that featured one of the old Adidas Every Player, Every Game pieces from the laundry tag. But it wasn't the designated Every Player, Every Game laundry tag set that Alex and I talked about. So it was just in a regular 101 card. But think about the timing of that, of this, you know, this patch piece and Jamal Murray, because he was a rookie in the 2016-2017 season. Nike took over in the 2017-2018 season. So that means that this Adidas tag has to be from his rookie season, which I think that's pretty cool. If I was a potential buyer of that card, I would definitely take that into consideration when figuring out my max bid. Anyway, I have been enjoying seeing all the cards that have been pulled. I haven't seen that LeBron yet, that 101 that we talked about. I figured that's out there. I have seen some of the nicer triple logo mans. Those are out there. I think the hashtag on Instagram, Logo Man Tracker, might even have a lot of those. You could just pull those up pretty easily. So thank you to whoever's doing that. But a lot of nice stuff out there. For me, there's been just a lot of window shopping so far. But like Alex said, if the stars align at some point, maybe I'll get to go in the store and make a purchase, but we'll see. Okay, so as I mentioned in the intro, there was an article from Bloomberg last week, and it was titled How Michael Rubin Ended Up Holding All the Cards. And like every other time I've talked about an article on this show, I encourage you to go and read it for yourself. I don't want you to just take my summary and take that, you know, as 100% that's all the article said, because it's not. And I think all of us think and respond to information a little differently. So please go read that article if you can. I know it's behind a paywall. It's out there, though. Okay. Now, if you think back to the time all the sports licenses were getting gobbled up by Fanatics, there were some people on social media that pointed out they thought that the whole thing felt like an aggressive takeover of sorts. And this was before we knew all the details. And I will say we probably still don't know them all. At least I don't know them all. And I don't think this article gave all of them either. But a couple years have passed. And I feel like the authors of this article have done a pretty good job of laying everything out. At least the framework for what has happened. And I'm going to try and summarize the facts for you. And then you can come to whatever conclusions you see fit about the situation on your own. Like I said, this is going to be brief. Not going to spend a lot of time with this, but supposedly Michael Rubin went to Major League Baseball and explained to them that Topps was fumbling the baseball license in a number of ways. I won't go into all of it, but eventually he convinced them to sign a deal with Fanatics. And while all that was going on, Topps had these big plans to go public, but you know, they're going to go public, but then they lose the baseball license. Well, that's pretty much the end of that. So Michael Eisner ended up selling Topps to Fanatics for $500 million. And Michael Rubin wasn't done then. He went out and pursued the NBA and the NFL licenses, which were set to run out in 2025 and 2026. And that's still the dates that we have. The article didn't mention it, but for basketball, I have read in several places September of 2025. So anyway, he set out to get those licenses and he got them, at least when the other ones run out. And while he was able to make a deal to start the baseball stuff up immediately, so he had, you know, some other deal that made that happen, he wanted to do the same thing and basically buy them out of their contracts, or however you want to phrase that. But he wanted to start basketball and football immediately as well. But for whatever reason, he backed out of that deal that was in place in January of 2023. And we didn't get a specific reason why. I don't know the specifics behind that. However, while that's going on, Fanatics purchased a major stake of the company in Texas that prints most of Panini's cards. So there's all of these layers here. And then on top of that, 30 Panini employees left for jobs at the new Fanatics facility in Dallas in the span of less than 1 week. So that, you know, I think Panini kind of feels like that was orchestrated. And since that time, a legal battle has ensued. And I'm not going to say, you know, whether it was or not, or what I think. Take all of that for what you will. But like I said earlier, I think this whole series of events has major implications on the state of manufacturing, both now and in the future. People have sent me this article. They've been asking me about it. So I said, okay, yeah, I'll address it. It's something that is probably going to affect us whether we like it or not. So It's out there. If you want to read more, feel free to pull that article up on Bloomberg.com. All right, enough of that. Let's talk about the mail. Okay, and this will probably be a pretty quick mail segment this week as well. I don't figure you want to hear much about the cheap flux parallels I've been picking up or the 180-point mag I picked up for my NBA Finals net card that ended up being too small. I thought for sure 180-point would cut it, but it didn't. And anyway, I digress. The most notable card I picked up in the last week or two was a 2018-2019 Panini Status Draft Night Auto of Bruce Brown. And yeah, I just talked about buying a Bruce Brown card. It was that 2023-24 Prism Gold I picked up. But then this one showed up on eBay unexpectedly as well. And I have a little bit of a thing for 2018-2019 draft autos. And you've heard me say it before, but I think they are some of the best sticker autographs Panini, or really any company for that matter, has ever produced. And this comes a week after Alex and I talked about how we try to avoid sticker autos if possible. But these sticker autos are different. Because back in this era, well, starting in 2017, Panini had reps show up at draft night with sheets of jumbo stickers. And they did this in 2017, but they just slapped the stickers on the front of the card. And even though I feel like those are significant, they're kind of ugly. The 2018 version, however, was the first year where they built them into the cards. And I should add, 2018 was a retail exclusive product, and this specific auto set was exclusive to Blasters. So when you factor all of that in, I would guess a lot of the people that own these or have pulled these, they have no idea they're even stickers. They might not even know the significance of the card because they don't tell you all this information on the back. But either way, these cards were really well done. And it doesn't seem like that long ago, but I guess it was now. It's been 6 or 7 years since all of these were manufactured. But this was before the era where sets like Leaf or Bowman or Contenders would have players sign thousands and thousands of stickers while they were still in college. So a lot of times players hadn't shortened their autographs yet. Or because Panini was having them sign so few stickers on this night, the players actually took their time to do a good job with it. And the print run on the draft night autos is 32. You know, I figured they had them sign a few other things as well. I don't know if they were signing any other sets, but all of the photos I've seen of players signing on draft night, and there are some on Getty Images of certain players, it's just the jumbo sticker sheets for the draft night autos. Case in point about the signatures. A lot of the Bruce Brown autographs I've seen in Panini products just have this scrunched up version of his signature, whereas this card I just purchased, it's a little more elongated, and it has Bruce Brown Jr. So you can kind of see why I think these cards are really significant. And when Bruce Brown signed with the Pacers, this card was number one on my Bruce Brown want list. I put it in my save searches, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited with no luck. And then come January, the Pacers shipped Bruce out to the Raptors, and I still hadn't found a copy of this card. Well, guess what? Of course, it shows up right after that when he's settling in with his new team. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, he's not a Pacer anymore. Do I want this? But the price wasn't all that bad. It was about half of what I'd been willing to pay for it just a few months before. And considering I liked the set so much, and I failed to get Bruce's autograph when I saw the team in Miami, he just looked at my card and walked by. And he had a good game there, so it was kind of a memorable night. And Bruce probably won't have much in the way of Pacers cards going forward. So, you know, factoring all of that together, I decided I was going to go ahead and pick this one up. And I'm glad I did. It will go nicely with the other Pacers legends I have from that year. DeAndre Ayton, yeah, Pacers legend, and Aaron Holiday. All right, before I move into today's main segment, I want to remind you that this show is brought to you in part by the good people over at ComC.com, your home for buying, selling, flipping, and grading. Their consignment marketplace is home to over 33 million cards, from basketball's biggest stars like LeBron James and Kevin Durant, to Marvel favorites like Spider-Man and Captain America. ComC has something for every type of collector. Visit ComC.com today to build your collection with your favorite cards. Okay, and then real quick, some of you have asked me for ways you can help support this show. The easiest way is my eBay affiliate link. And using this link costs you absolutely nothing, just an extra 30 seconds or so of your time, but it helps support the show. To access this link, simply go to waxmuseumpodcast.com, click the eBay logo, shop as planned, so whatever you are going to buy anyway, just click my link first, and the show gets a small commission in the process. Once again, that's www.waxmuseumpodcast.com.
Hi, this is Alan Siegel, the designer of the NBA logo, and now you're listening to the Wax Museum Podcast.
Okay, so this past weekend, the Pacers G League affiliate, which is now the Indiana Mad Ants, they had a pair of games against the Osceola Magic, who play their home games in Kissimmee, which is a little over an hour away from me. They were the last two games of the regular season for both squads. Now, I had these marked earlier in the year because this was the Mad Ants' only trip to Florida, and I figured if my schedule allowed for it, I wanted to attend at least one of the games. So Mrs. Wax Museum and I ended up going Saturday because the Pacers had the night off, and not surprisingly, I had prepped some stuff for autographs before the game, so we made sure to get there an hour early before the game started so we could try and do that. And the prep was pretty easy this time around. I didn't need to do the full binder setup like I normally do for NBA games. A normal slider box with cards and just a Sharpie works just fine. And then the players I thought I might see were mostly guys I had prepared for in Orlando just a few weeks before, like Oscar Tshiebwe, Kendall Brown, and Isaiah Wong. They've all got Prism stuff out. And then there were a couple other guys that have cards that were not on the main roster when I saw them in Orlando. That's Elfrid Payton. Well, that's no problem. I actually pulled a 2014 Prism rookie of him just a month or two ago. Mojave King has stuff in Goodwin Champions and Metal Universe, but I didn't have any of that. And then Quentin Jackson, who they recently signed, he's got Panini stuff, but it's already signed, so I'm not going to get a signed card signed again. So it was really just those first four guys I mentioned that I was after. And I had attempted G League autographs one time before when the Magic's team was in Lakeland, and that was kind of tricky. I had to find a section of seating that was right above their exit from the floor. It wasn't a traditional tunnel setup like you would find at an NBA arena, and that was the case here in Kissimmee as well. I would guess the majority of G League venues are really just multi-purpose venues, meaning they work for basketball, but the setup is not always ideal. And this Osceola team plays in a venue called the Silver Spurs Arena, where they host rodeos and monster truck rallies and things like that. So when it comes to basketball, the ends of the arena are just kind of curtained off, and they don't have much in the way of floor seating. There might be a row or two courtside and some seating at tables behind that. And then there are big walkways that you can't really get to, or at least there is on one side of the court. The other side is kind of like their tunnel, the makeshift tunnel where they go to the locker rooms in the middle. So heading in, I knew autographs might be a bit of a challenge. I figured it wouldn't be hard getting the players to sign, but getting to them might be the bigger challenge. So, you know, if you can't get to them, even if they're willing to sign, well, what good is that? So I noticed there was a floor entrance right at the main gate of the arena, but they were checking tickets there, and I figured our $10 tickets weren't going to cut it. So I didn't even bother with that. Instead, we went up in the stands and kind of scouted things out from there because I'd never been to this arena before. And I noticed there was an area on one end of the floor that fans had access to called something like the Family Zone, where they had an inflatable basketball game and a small merch stand set up. This also happened to be the side of the floor where the Mad Ants were warming up. So I figured I'd head down there to the corner where the Mad Ants might run off and I'd be able to call players over. Now, had I been looking for a Magic player, I probably would have been out of luck during pregame. Seemed like there was no access for them, although it was fan appreciation night and supposedly the entire team was supposed to stay after to sign. I didn't have any need for that, so we left after the game, so I don't know how all that went down. I did see people lining up. It looked like, yeah, you were going to get autographs, but it might be kind of chaotic, so I didn't really want any part of that. Anyway, I was there for the Mad Ants, so back to the Mad Ants. By the time we got down to the floor, there were three players that were still warming up, and we got lucky because it was three of the four Mad Ants players that I had cards for. The only one that wasn't out there was Kendall Brown. I guess I'm just going to miss out on him every time I see him play. But Oscar Tshiebwe came over first. I had him sign a Prism Silver. There was one other fan in a Kentucky shirt that made his way over when he saw Oscar head our way. He had some sort of a Bowman card, and he got that signed. And then after Oscar was Elfrid Payton. And I remember he had just come into the league when I moved away from Charlotte, which is where I did most of my NBA autographing. So I don't think I've ever got him to sign before. And so he signed for me. And then last was Isaiah Wong. And all three of those guys took their time and gave me nice looking signatures. So really, my night was already made by this point, and the game hadn't even started. Now, I don't do a lot of actual game recaps on here. There are people that are paid to do that, that do a much better job than I ever could. So I'll just say now, the Mad Ants won. You know, that was great. That was what I was hoping for. But I do want to talk a little about the whole G League experience in general, and maybe sprinkle some specific instances from this game in. And keep in mind, this is primarily based on what I've experienced in the handful of games I've been to here in Central Florida. And not everything will be glowing, so this is not meant to be critical or anything like that, because I like seeing the different levels of basketball at different venues, and I want to try and convey that experience as best as I can for anyone that's never been. So, you know, that might be some of you guys, or maybe you have been before, and you can confirm what I've experienced, or maybe you had a different experience yourself. You know, we all go, we could go to the same place and experience things completely different. So I'm just going to share with you kind of the way I saw it or the way I've seen it from the games that I've been to. So the first thing I'll say is this. You have to understand it's essentially a minor league basketball game, and it can be very chaotic. More often than not, the games seem boring to me, and that's even when I'm watching them on TV, but also in person, the games can be very boring. Originally, when a G League team first came to Central Florida, I was pretty excited, and I thought, you know what, I might even get some sort of a ticket package. Well, I went to a game or two, and I decided against it, especially since it conflicted with the regular NBA schedule. You know, why would I go watch this local Magic G League team when I could sit at home and watch the Pacers on TV instead? So that's where my allegiances lie. So I definitely wasn't going to get any sort of ticket package. Another thing you need to know about the G League is that the NBA uses it to experiment with potential rule changes. And I remember going to a game maybe, I don't know, 7 years ago when they had just implemented the 14-second shot clock reset for offensive rebounds. It made the gameplay quicker, but when that gameplay is already pretty sloppy, you know, in my mind, it really didn't help things. And it might have led to more scoring, but it also led to more mistakes. And it didn't make me feel very optimistic about them implementing that rule in the NBA. But as you guys have seen, eventually they did. And that's one factor that often gets overlooked when people talk about the recent influx in scoring. Long story short, that's something they experimented with in the G League first. Another rule they've been playing with that hasn't made its way to the NBA yet is if there's a shooting foul on a two-point shot, a player will shoot one free throw to count for two, or one to count for three if it's a three-point shot. Now, that excludes the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter and then overtime if a game does go to overtime. The whole purpose of that is to cut down on the amount of time it takes to play a game, and I think they found that it generally reduces games by anywhere from, you know, 5 to 8 minutes. My guess is the NBA doesn't want to do that because, you know, more game time means more advertising time, and they don't want to give those dollars up. If it weren't for that, though, they probably would want to cut it down. Now, speaking of the NBA, the final takeaway I want to share with you about the whole G League experience is just how good the talent is right now in the NBA. I want you to take a moment and think about your favorite team. Think about the younger guys at the end of the bench that don't get any minutes or very rarely get minutes. And maybe they don't even dress. These are the guys that are wearing suits or summer league jerseys on their Prizm cards, if they even have cards. A lot of these guys will log significant minutes in the G League, though, just to keep in basketball shape or to develop in general. Well, it's not uncommon for them to drop 30 on any given night or to fill up the stat sheet in a number of ways. For example, I mentioned Oscar Tshiebwe earlier. He's played like 25 minutes total in the NBA, and that's just a few minutes in garbage time here and there. Well, he just recorded his 8th 20-point, 20-rebound game of the season for the Mad Ants. Not the game I went to, it was the game before that. I think he still had like 20 and 15 or something when I saw him, so it's still a pretty regular thing. So, you know, that'll be some of your end-of-the-bench guys are just killing it in the G League. So the talent differential there, the gap is pretty big. Now, as I wind things down, I realize I probably didn't do a very good job of selling you on the G League in these last few minutes, but that wasn't my goal either. I'm not trying to hype it up for you. Like I said, I kind of wanted to describe the experience for you. I know the season's pretty much over now, but for next season, I would encourage you, if you have a team close to you and you've never been before, go ahead and check it out. You know, tickets are cheap. It's not going to cost you much. And you might even like it. I mean, if you're listening to this show, you are probably a pretty big basketball fan in general. So maybe then, even if you don't like the games, there'll be a component of it that you do like. So for me, that's getting cards signed. Is it something I'd want to do a couple times a month? Absolutely not. But I do like seeing some of these Pacers players or former NBA players once a year or so. All right, so maybe there was something I talked about in the first part of the episode that stood out to you, or maybe you've had your own experience going to a G League game. Feel free to drop me a comment and tell me all about it on social media. You can find me on Instagram under @WaxMuseumPodcast or X under the handle @WaxMuseumPC. In the meantime, if you like the content I'm providing, please subscribe, rate and review on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Hit up the website for my affiliate links. Tag Taco Bell and let them know they can pay me in burritos. And until next time, this is the Wax Museum Podcast.